And welcome back to Channel 9 Live here at the Visual Studio 2012 launch. My name is Brian Keller. I'm here today with Jason Zander. Just as a reminder, you can tweet us questions and we'll take your questions live here from the launch. Jason, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Brian. Thank you for having me.
This is a big day. Congratulations, sir, yes, on shipping Visual Studio 2012. It must feel good, huh?
It feels really good, of course, with a release like this. You know, it's 2 years in the making, lots of different parts, and lots of people that, you know, so hats off to the team for doing such a fantastic job getting us here.
Absolutely. I want to take you back first. I want to take you back 2 years. I'm thinking April of 2010.
Yep.
You were launching Visual Studio 2010 in the UK, if I'm not mistaken.
That's correct. Yes.
And you kind of got stuck there longer than you wanted because of the volcano and some interesting
volcano.
Things.
This volcano. They grounded me. Yes.
Yes. Yeah. And so you finally made it back to Redmond. Visual Studio 2010 was an amazing release. How do you top that? I mean, take me back to May of 2010. I'm sure you had a lot of ideas for what you wanted to do in this release. What were the ways that you really tackled this one to try and say, hey, we've got to outdo ourselves, we've got to address the way that applications are changing? What did that discussion look like?
Yeah, I'd say there's two big categories I'd mention for this one. One, we were making our own transformation on introducing many more agile practices in. We certainly had some support inside of the product, but we really knew that we were going to embrace it big time. Half the team was already there, but I wanted it more like 90%. So we really had to triple down on agile and get a bunch of stuff because you just need it if you're going to be developing software. So that was one huge category of thing. The other thing was fundamentals. And when I say fundamentals, what I mean by that, Visual Studio 2010, it's a great product. You know, it's an awesome product. I also got feedback on it that said, look, I'd like the performance to be better. Mm-hmm. You know, there's few things that as I use it day to day, I'd like you guys to improve on that. And so we really took that feedback to heart and said, for a new release, we are going to do a significant investment on fundamentals and really try and address some of that feedback and make sure that as we turn the crank again and give you the next version, you know, we can answer that feedback.
That's great. So I know that you do a lot. You mentioned you use your own product. I know you have a different term than dog fooding. What do you call it?
Well, dog fooding is what we do. We eat our own dog food. It's kind of an American thing.
Right.
Eric Gamma joined the team a while back, and then the European version of that is drink your own champagne,
nice,
or eat your own chocolate. So
nice.
A little classier than the American version. So I don't know. We'll have to update ourselves at some point.
But, sounds good. We'll go with that. So I know that you use it both professionally and you do a lot of your own app development on the side. A lot of people don't know this about you, but you're a coder at heart.
Yeah, I am. I've always enjoyed that. Frankly, it's one of the things I've really loved about being part of Visual Studio is that actually using the product and making sure that it's working well, I mean, that means writing code and actually doing that kind of work. So I've had my TFS preview account, you know, like the first day that we got it out, even before external. Most recently, I've been spending a lot of time writing web applications. I tore through jQuery Mobile, and Bootstrap and a couple of other things like that. So I really do like writing code, and to me, I learn a lot by actually using it. And as I give feedback into the team, you know, it's both from talking with customers, but it's also as a user.
Sure, absolutely. That's great. And so do you have, I know this is like asking you to pick your favorite child here, but do you have a couple of features that are kind of your favorite in this release?
Well, I mean, yes, it would be hard to pick exactly your favorite child. I mean, I actually did a blog post that went through like 10 different favorites. Mm-hmm. In fact, in the keynote today, we covered a lot of those. To me, in my own personal development, I'll just pick out an area of development that I really like. As I've gone through and done much more web design, you know, websites, as well as Windows applications for Windows 8, I've been doing a lot more with HTML and JavaScript and CSS than I've ever done, you know, before. I really like the features that tie together closer what's actually happening in the browser with the source code that was there. So Page Inspector, the F12 tools, the interactive mode in Blend, I like that category because I found that as a developer, as I'm going in, looking through tracing styles and like, why the heck is that thing purple and blinking?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how did that happen? It's like, okay, I'm maybe not too big of a CSS expert, but
sure,
having the tools be able to poke and tell me that I think is really cool. And then the other one I'd say from the team side, I really love the task board. So being able to go in and actually track my work, I've actually been using that as a to-do list here and there. So it's a nice environment. It's very simple and straightforward, but it's amazing how effective it can be. So
I recently heard of someone who actually planned their wedding,
yes,
using TFS. So
that's hardcore.
It is
that
pretty
is
hardcore.
We got some great MVPs. So,
absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely. So that's really great. So I want to ask you a little bit about HTML. XAML. I know there's a lot of different choices for how I build applications these days. If I'm a developer out there and I have to learn just one technology, where do I spend my time these days?
Yeah, and the big thing for us, of course, is we're trying to make sure you have maximum possible choice, because we do have people with different skill sets and what you're targeting. You know, what I would say is, look, it really comes down to what's the purpose of the application you're writing and how you're actually doing it. So if you're going to write a really killer application, you know, for Windows 8, and you already know XAML, you're good to go. You know, you're ready to get going. Now, if the application you're trying to write, you're trying to get maximum possible reach, you know, from a client perspective, then clearly HTML is the right answer for that, you know, because basically every browser out there on any device, no matter who actually built it and what operating system it's running, it's going to have the browser and it's going to have that capability. So HTML is a really awesome choice for that. So we're really trying to make sure that, you know, whatever skill set you've got, you're going to be relevant, you're going to be able to build really killer applications, you know, for these platforms.
Sure, absolutely. And a lot of people may not know this about you, but you actually started off in the developer division building the CLR. You were running that team, that's right. And you know, a lot of people are asking the question, let's put it out there, you know, .NET, WinRT, what's the future? What's the role of .NET in this modern apps world? How do you respond to that?
Yeah, no, .NET is absolutely strategic to what we're doing. There's a ton of new features in .NET Framework 4.5. So we're going to continue to advance, you know, the .NET space in addition to, you know, the CLR and the core languages that we have. It does make you incredibly productive. So there's a ton of new features that are out there. Mm-hmm. You know, and we showed some of them today. Asynchronous support, you know, inside of the programming languages. We keep advancing, you know, the tools and the content and things like that. So pretty happy with that. We've also done a lot, you know, for both the back end and for the client side, so you can continue to do that. Now, WinRT, you know, mentioned as an example, that's a case where you get into Windows. One of the things you recognize is the way you're constructing applications and the attributes we want is changing, right? So I want a secure environment. I want the store. I want, you know, a little bit more of a lockdown environment, the things that we talked about at the Build conference even a year ago as a design principle. I also want touch. I want to be able to use my finger, right? So things like hover effect, like what the heck does that mean? You know, like 5, 4, 3, you know, like that's not what hover effect means, right? So I have to, so when you start to figure out a new way to write these applications that work that way, then you do go in to create a technology that's going to help with that. And that's what Windows RT is, in the WinRT. That stack is designed to help me out with that. But even there, you know, I can use C Sharp, I can use Visual Basic, like it's got a CLR in there, it's using the WinRT, and that's the right kind of environment. So, you know, kind of brings that forward.
And what I love is portable class libraries. I mean, the fact that I can architect the investments that I'm making so that I put a lot of that code into those portable class libraries, and then I get reuse across Windows 8, across traditional desktop applications, across phone, even Xbox applications.
That's right. If you use the right kind of pattern, like an MVVM sort of pattern or something like that, the part that I actually want to do unique to these devices has got more to do with the view side, right? Because, you know, the screen real estate I have on a phone and the way I lay out my data and navigation, I think I want it to be different. I don't want to just take a phone app and blow it up on a tablet and not use the space. And conversely, I don't want to just sit there with scroll bars forever on, you know, it just doesn't work.
Right.
So that part I want to actually do differently. But underneath of that is a whole bunch of common logic, right? I mean, I need to go fetch pictures and, you know, kind of do filters and, you know, that's kind of your business logic. That thing, it doesn't really matter if it's running a smartphone or on the tablet. It's the same set. So you're right. The portable libraries allow me to go in and write essentially, you know, the model, the controller, you know, you take your pick, your view model, whatever pattern you're using, but it allows me to write that stuff that's below where the pixels show up and be able to share it in multiple places.
That's great. So, Jason, I know you've been using Visual Studio 2012 since before we had a name for it, right?
Yep.
But I know that a lot of people out there must be sitting there saying, okay, today's the day, it's the launch, it's time for me to actually start using Visual Studio 2012. But what about the rest of my team? They're on Visual Studio 2010. I'm not going to convince everybody to move overnight. You guys have done a lot of work on compatibility, right?
Yeah. We did a feature we call Project Compatibility. It was exactly for this reason. As we came out with 2010, had a lot of people that really wanted to use it, but it's like, look, every time I open a project, you write new version stamp into it, and then the guys down the hallway can't use it. So what we did this time is we said explicitly, and this was actually part of the fundamentals effort, we're not going to make breaking changes to the file format, right? We're going to keep that the same, and we invested in doing all the testing and engineering work so that when 2012 opens a project, it leaves it alone. And it's only until you decide to actually upgrade it, do something that is not going to work in 2010, and you make that choice, now we'll go ahead and update the file format to a newer version. And the cool thing about that, and I've actually spent the week in the UK last week talking to people that, you know, were just really excited about it because they had picked up all the previews and started using the previews. And they'd already rolled it out, and they didn't have to do it across the whole team. So it made all the difference in their ability to kind of pick it up and try it out.
Right.
So it's a very popular feature.
Yeah, it's those little things that developers love. I love that. So talk to me about the journey that it took for us to get here. You know, about a year ago, we released the first developer preview in conjunction with the Windows 8 developer preview that was out there. And then a few months later, we had a beta. Now, I heard a lot during this morning's keynote, Soma thanking our customers and our partners for giving us feedback that would help us refine that release. But that feedback falls on your backlog, Jason.
Yes.
How do you manage that? I mean, you've got hundreds of people working as part of this release.
Yep.
How do you respond and be agile and respond to that feedback?
Yeah, it's a good question, and it's again something else I really love about the team and the product. There's a lot of very passionate people that use the product. They're not afraid to come back and tell us about that, and I do actually appreciate that. You know, the tricky thing, there's kind of two ways to think about this. One is making sure that we scale it.
Mm-hmm.
Being able to scale it, we're using the more of our public, you know, forums, so User Voice and Connect and those sort of things. People can register issues that they have. People can vote for it. We do actually use that. We use that to help make a decision on how impactful is this to you, how many other people feel the same way. Now, the other thing we do have to factor into that is that there are going to be, you know, disagreements, actually, and even the community has disagreements on which way they like it. So, you know, for every person that says, I really dislike the UI, you'll still find other examples where people say, wow, I actually love this. This is pretty cool.
Sure.
And so just know in those sorts of cases, there's never necessarily one 100% correct answer. So we definitely factor that in. We scale up through the tools and those sort of things. And then sometimes we're also trying to make sure that we're looking at a bigger picture thing. For example, now that the new version of Office is out, I think people can look at our UI, you know, the final UI we ended with, and go, oh, I actually see two major desktop applications from Microsoft, and wow, okay, they are actually sharing a similar kind of look and feel,
right.
And you know, now we can help people build those style of applications as well. That's just one example of feedback.
But. Yeah, there's those first couple of days when you open up Visual Studio 2012, and you're like, oh my gosh, who moved my cheese? And then, you know, a few days later, you're like, yeah, this makes sense. This is really a much nicer UI. It's
yes.
like the Office ribbon was that way for a lot of people, right? It took them a while to kind of find where things go. Once you kind of understand and embrace that model, I personally find I'm a lot more productive.
Yeah. And the dark theme. My God, the dark theme.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I really love that.
Are you a dark theme guy or a light
Absolutely.
Theme guy? Yeah?
Yeah, we've done the studies. It turns out that there's like 30% of us that just love the dark theme or are super, super enthused about it. Now, we need to make sure we have both. But this is a good example of feedback, right? I mean, because some of the feedback we got on the original beta, there was some very good actionable feedback in there. It wasn't just, I don't like it. You know, there was the comments that I most appreciated were the ones that said, here's why this is causing me problems.
Right.
And so, for example, you know, the use of all caps for things like Solution Explorer, they get truncated with so many tabs I couldn't actually read. It's like, oh, that makes sense.
Right.
And then there was cases where we'd tick and color out, and people were saying, but I use that to help me navigate. And so we used those because those were actionable. It was a concrete issue that someone had, and we were able to hit the original design goals that we had on Focus, but still go back and solve some of those. So, you know, we did incorporate that sort of feedback.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about that. So you talk about Focus. Can you expand on what you mean by that, by pulling some of that color out?
Yeah. So if you think about it, how much time do you spend every day looking at Visual Studio if you're a developer? You know what I mean?
Sure.
I'm spending a lot of time, you know, in there. And what am I really trying to concentrate on? Well, I'm designing things in a designer. I'm writing code and doing authoring, debugging, those sorts of things. So one of the things we're trying to do is to make sure that, you know, that's where the focus and the attention of what you're working on is. That's the kind of, you know, and we've posted all the background and examples on the blog and user studies and those sort of things.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's basically the top level goal for that. But again, I think, you know, the original versions, you know, we felt like we pushed it too far. We used feedback and pulled some of the color and contrast back in, and we've gotten good feedback on that. And we'll, you know, continue to get feedback that says, but it's not quite what I want, and you know, and that's fair. And as I say, with this many users, there won't be 100%, you know, kind of agreement on this sort of thing. So.
Sure, I call it our Wizard of Oz moment when we unveiled the RC, and there's some color back where people asked for it. So
yes.
It's really nice. So we've got some questions here in the queue. How has the CLR been modernized in this modern world of kind of, you know, modern apps?
Yeah. Well, I mean, a great example of that we showed today even is the asynchronous functionality.
Okay.
Right. So there's an example where, you know, historically we have an imperative programming model, fairly synchronous, certainly much more easy to write code that way. And you can go through, but the problem is if I think about modern applications, you can't have the UI blocked, right?
Sure.
I mean, and on the back end, I can't really have logic stalling because that, you know, takes down my throughput. So asynchronous is something you got to go have. The question is, how do I make that approachable so that everybody can program against that? Because, you know, I've written a bunch of, I've written a bunch of engine code in the CLR, you know, tons of multi-threaded locking synchronization. That is a hard thing to go do,
mm-hmm.
right? And so it's the sort of thing where you can absolutely go do it, but you can wind up with a lot of code. And in this case, it's, you know what, the tasks from a pattern level is actually reasonably simple, right? I want this task to complete. When it does, I want this to happen. And by the way, I want you to kind of drain the pool, and I want you to make sure that everything else is getting its own slice of time as well.
Right.
And so await and async and those sort of things, great example of modernizing it. The portable libraries example is another one, so I can target multiple devices, you know, and then just basically modernizing the framework to add, you know, new things along the way. We've added, you know, generics, we've added lambdas, we've mm-hmm. added link, you know, I mean, that's a long progression of features that add up to, you know, basically helping you out.
Sure, and I love a lot of the APIs in WinRT that help me do things like roaming data, where I
yes.
can save data locally, and then if I go to another Windows 8 machine, it's just there. It's awesome.
No, that's right. And if you look at, there's all sorts of examples mm-hmm. when you start doing this, you know, being able to write push notifications in the back end and pull those
right.
forward, you know, I mean, websites and the MVC patterns that we've got, you know, being able to flow control and all that. That's at the framework level above the
right.
CLR, but you know, all those things are examples of helping pull you forward.
Right. Now, I visit a lot of really big development shops. I know you do as well. You've been talking to a lot of big banks that have solutions that may have, you know, dozens, if not hundreds, of projects in them. How much of a focus was those large projects for VS and making sure that I can quickly get in and start doing my job?
Yeah, absolutely. We got that feedback as well. There's a few things that we wanted to work on, again, in the area of fundamentals. So
mm-hmm.
project load is, of course, something we do a lot. You go in and get into your project, and the last thing you want to do, speaking of async,
yep.
is to be sitting there with my UI blocked, waiting.
Go
waiting.
Get some coffee,
you know, it's like,
yeah.
Geez, this is silly. And so we worked on a feature called asynchronous project load, which basically said, look, when I open the project, I'm typically going to have the buffers open I was working with anyway. Get me up and running as fast as possible. And the computer has lots of power, so if you need to do other stuff, go do it off in the background. And so you'll see that with the new version that we open up very, very fast. We get you going on what you were
right.
doing. In the background, we'll use background processes to help bring up the rest of the state. You know, and that way, you're not really ever blocked. So
right.
it's just another good example of, you know, user interactiveness.
And even the little things like IntelliSense across huge solutions. We had some comments here from Channel 9. They've noticed that that's a lot better as
yes.
well. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, one of the things that we did is an investment for the 2012 release. We actually went in and did deep instrumentation of typing.
Mm.
And so, for example, think about it for a moment. I type in some kind of identifier and I hit the dot, a period, in a language like C#, for example. What happens when you do that? Well, think about it. We're actually parsing the code.
Yeah.
We're actually pulling out an AST. We're figuring out what could be the completion portion of that. Once I get the list back, I've got an MRU list and the full list over here. I need to pop up a combo box. Now I'm hitting the UI, and then I need to respond to user.
It's a lot of work.
All of that stuff's happening when you hit just the period.
Right.
Right. And yet I want that to be incredibly fast. Right, so we actually went through and wrote deep instrumentation. We can tell you every single piece of code that runs when you do that. We added that instrumentation and we went through and were just brutal about getting rid of stuff that didn't need to be there, getting it so that it can be more predictive, so when it does land, I got the answers quicker, and that kind of stuff. So you should feel typing actually going better and faster than it did before.
Now, that's great. Now, what about hybrid apps? What about apps where maybe I have some existing C++ code that I want to pull in? I want to work with some DirectX, but I also want to work with XAML and take advantage of some of the new modern UI constructs. That I understand that's all possible now, right?
Yeah, it is. Let's take the example of the new Windows WinRT applications that I can go write. Those apps for Windows, in addition to making sure that we made it really easy for you to start a project, you know, HTML, JavaScript, or XAML with C++, or XAML with C#, or VB, We also wanted to make sure that you could actually mix and match your packages correctly. So a very common example, one you just mentioned, I could have an HTML JavaScript application. Maybe it's a picture viewer, a picture editor, where I want to, you know, click it and get a, you know, a sepia tone or, you know, invert everything. I mean, that's a very intensive operation, and I probably don't do that in JavaScript. But as you point out, there's great C++ libraries for that. So that's a case where we actually invested in making sure that you could pull in the other types of code in there. But not only that, there's the packaging and setup and deployment pieces that are required. In the editing environment, we also did projections. So now I can come back, so I'm in JavaScript, but I add a reference to C++. We can interrogate the metadata, pull it back out, and present it to you. So again, when you hit the dot, I actually get a list of things that I can call. You know, and you know, historically, this was done with Deckel specs. You know, P-invoke anybody? You remember those? Like, we want the tools to be able to do that stuff for you. It reduces the errors. You're much more productive. But now I can have this kind of a scenario.
Right. So we finished Visual Studio 2012. Time to rest on our laurels a little bit.
We've already started VNext.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about that. So Soma announced that we're not going to have to wait another 2 years before we see the next investment for Visual Studio. What does the future look like?
Yeah, I think the as we're going to be moving much more. We talked about continuous services as a concept for, you know, how to deliver more and more functionality. We're doing that ourselves already. Mm-hmm. So the fact that, you know, Brian Harry and his team are shipping the service like every 3 weeks is just awesome. It's amazing. That means we can put out new functionality much more rapidly. Now, we have to be responsible about how we do that. So that's a case where I can put that software in the back end. If it's in the browser capability, you can start using it immediately. Mm-hmm. There's going to be cases where we're going to need to update the client so it can take advantage of that. And that's where, you know, Brian and someone talked about us doing more of these sort of updates. But there again, there's a balance to strike. I mean, I don't know that people want to see, you know, hey, new version of Visual Studio, you know, every 3 days.
Sure.
I don't know if I'd want that, actually. You know, so we're going to have to balance it, you know. So, and that's what this update is, you know, mechanism is about. And then within that, you know, Visual Studio 2012, awesome release, tons of functionality, and we had a backlog, and there were some things that didn't make it into the backlog, but we are not going to wait for, you know, 1, 2, 3 years to give you.
Great.
So those things are going to start coming out much quicker.
Well, that is a great segue, because we have Brian Harry here next to talk about that continuous value delivery. And so, Jason, congratulations again. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Brian.
And we'll be back in just a couple minutes here on Channel 9 Live at the Visual Studio 2012 launch.